Greetings, it's Terry at Cottage in the Court. Wow, what a busy year it's been. I cannot believe it is July. Where has 2021 gone? I know one thing, it has gone in such a positive direction for many things as we patiently await for other things to turn around. And at the same time, we are witnessing nature evolve all around us. As I look at my garden, which I haven't been in a lot lately because I'm writing, but you know, the garden is still there for me. I have vivid blooms that are popping up and out all over. Even things in pots that need to go in the ground are showing their beauty in spite of the intense heat and now the humidity. I'm not complaining though, except one thing that I wish had survived. It was my fuchsia. Every year I buy a fuchsia in honor of my parents because my dad could grow a fuchsia and it would bloom prolifically and I would be oh so jealous. However, I have a friend, Teo, who knows all about fuchsias and then some. We are both members of the Garden Bloggers Fling, and we miss getting together with our other garden bloggers at the Fling, but we're looking forward to 2022. In the meantime, I had to ask Teo, what am I doing wrong? What's up with my fuchsia? Allow me to introduce you to Teo. Hi, Teo. How are you?
I'm fine, Terry. How are you doing?
I'm absolutely wonderful. So I met you at the Fling. And maybe before then, but definitely at the Garden Bloggers Fling. And I know that at the time you were in New York, now you're not, but you're still in love with fuchsias.
Mm-hmm. Oh God, yeah. It's fuchsias has been a lifelong passion of mine. Mm-hmm. And people often ask, how did you get into fuchsias? Because, you know, other people are into begonias or gizanariads or succulents. And I often joke that I was born in a bed of fuchsias because both my mother and my grandfather always had them in the garden.
Oh, wow. Did they have specialty ones or did they just pick them up every spring?
They, you know, in their case, probably at the flower market. So some of my earliest memories are, I don't know if you've ever heard of popping fuchsias. But that's an old childhood addiction. It's when you grab a bud and squeeze it so it has that satisfying and it opens up prematurely.
Oh, wow.
And of course, mother doesn't really like that.
So you did it anyway, right?
I did it anyway. So it's part of my addiction, I think. And I still occasionally go out and when I'm looking at a blossom and I can't remember what the color of the corolla, the petals on the inside of the fuchsia are, I'll like pop it open and say, take a sneak peek.
Oh, wow. So when did you get serious about this fuchsia addiction?
Oh, probably by the time I was a teenager, I think, maybe in high school. Mm-hmm. I had discovered a fuchsia called Gartenmeister Bonstedt, which is an old German hybrid that was bred in 1905 by Carl Bonstedt, the Gartenmeister himself. And that fuchsia has orange blossoms that look like honeysuckle blossoms, basically. Mm-hmm. And it was just something I'd never really seen at that point. And I bought one at the nursery, and being a teenager and not having much cash in the wallet, I propagated it. By the end of the summer, I think I turned that one plant into 25. So wow. That was, and then I just discovered a nursery. I think it was in Tennessee, and it doesn't exist anymore. But they had a plant list that you could order all of these really wonderfully described fuchsias by mail. And I did that. And by the end of that summer, I think I had 50 plants going.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. And you grew them in New York. Did you grow them outside?
I had a garden apartment in New York, in Yorkville. People wanted to call it the Upper East Side, but it's actually Yorkville. It's the old German neighborhood, oddly enough, around the corner from Gracie Mansion and Carl Schurz Park, where Gracie Mansion is the official residence on the East River of the mayors of New York. And the apartment was garden apartment around the corner, which means ground floor. The back opens up onto a private garden, and that's where I grew them. Mm.
Did you have to bring them inside?
Ah, that's the hard part. Of course, by the end of a growing season, I would end up with way too many plants, and there was no place to keep very many of them. I had a window in the back of the apartment. There was a shelf. I had a light set up in the living room with fluorescent lights at the time, where I would take cuttings and raise those. But I think that at least 3/4 of the fuchsias that I grew outside would just have to be sacrificed to the gods of winter at the end of the season. It was sort of sad, but on the bright side, it gave me actually a broad ranging experience. I could grow a whole new crop of different kinds the next year. So when you're growing 30, maybe about 30 different ones, mm-hmm. and of those, I would keep a few favorites, and the next year I would grow 30 different ones. So I have a broad ranging experience of how fuchsias did in the climate of New York, which by the way has a lot to do with the climate of Washington DC. We are technically on the Köppen scale, humid subtropical, which we have those wonderfully humid, the best of southern summers and northern winters, mm-hmm. where the dew points hit 70 degrees in the summertime. And then in the winter, I think I remember plunging down to 4 degrees for several days sometimes.
Mm. So fuchsias love the humidity.
Not really. They if it's hot and humid, through a lot of hot and humid nights where the dew points are really high, they don't really like that. It's the reason that traditionally, probably why you might have had such a hard time growing fuchsias in the upper south, Virginia, because of the high dew points at night. They start to choke and they can't breathe. And it's also traditionally why you don't see many fuchsias below. Even Baltimore is probably too hot and humid for extended periods at night.
You're right.
I mean, it's those long sweltering nights. What's funny is fuchsias were wildly popular during the Victorian period, 1850s, 60s, that they rise and fall in popularity. But since I'm also partially a historian, and I love the history of things, I love the history of these plants, and there's newspaper reports from Baton Rouge, for example, of ships arriving from New England with the latest in fuchsias. And I just cringe because that's even more hot and humid. And these poor plants, unless it's winter, must have just shriveled up and coughed themselves to death.
I think you're right.
in the humid summers of Baton Rouge, it's like, whoa. Huh. In New Orleans, same thing. There are newspaper reports of people being successful with them in the 1860s in the mountains of Georgia, for example, where there's a little bit of a respite. Mm-hmm. There's one woman who took I can't remember her name, but she always took the prize for fuchsias at the local flower show in the spring, which probably isn't too hard since I'm sure nobody else was growing them or able to grow them. So she probably had the market pretty well cornered.
I bet she did. And yeah. So now you're in a different zone.
Mm-hmm.
A year. How are your fishes doing?
Oh, well, let's talk about that. A year and a half ago, I left Fuchsias in the City behind to come to Portland, Oregon. And it is practically fuchsia heaven because of the climate. We can grow most of them outside in the ground as hardies, usually I would say in the full sun. But there's fuchsia species here that Fuchsia boliviana, for example, unless it's a very, very cold winter, is a species from the mountains of Peru. Machu Picchu, the Inca, actually knew this fuchsia very well. They raised the berries to eat and spread it all along the roads, the Inca roads from Machu Picchu, all through the Andes. They called the berries chimpu chimpu. They're still sold in local markets. They're some of the best eating fuchsia berries you'll ever find. The Spanish call them corazón corazón, which heart heart, because supposedly these fuchsia berries are good for what ails the heart.
Oh wow!
So anyway,
have you eaten?
Oh god, yeah, I have a very large bush. It's not in fruit yet, but it will be coming into fruit. And I have friends in California, for example, in San Francisco, who absolutely relish it also grows out in the ground there. Here it tends to die back, but they absolutely relish the fuchsia berries. And a couple of friends will go out and pick them off their bushes and drop them on top of their cereal or their yogurt in the morning.
Yeah, I was surprised. I did a little research. I was surprised that they were edible. I never knew that before.
It's one of the things that many people don't realize. I have a saying that I always push, eat your fuchsias. It's the unknown fruit. The hard part with a lot of fuchsias is that many of the hybrids that you see in the garden are bred for looks and not taste. So the perception that most people have in that case is that they're rather bland. And also you have to make sure they're fully ripe. Otherwise it tastes like crunching on little packets of wallpaper paste, which is a lot of fruit. Yeah. It's one of the things I always say, eat your fuchsias. Also the blossoms are perfectly edible. If you're used to dropping marigolds in your salads, you try some fuchsia blossoms sometimes to spice up your life. With a salad.
I bet that'd be pretty though.
It is. And the whole plant is hypoallergenic. There's nothing poisonous about it at all. So when people freak out when their kid or the reaches on the bush and grabs a fuchsia berry, they're perfectly edible. The leaves too, if you're so inclined, but
the berry and the bloom. It's the funny because my dad was more or less 6B in Burtonsville, Maryland. His fuchsias were always just gorgeous. I am closer to DC, definitely more humid, to a point where I would go there. He's 20 minutes away and the temperature was different than what it is at my house. Mm-hmm. I have never had luck with fuchsias since I've been this close to DC.
Well, I have a little list of fuchsias that tend to do better in the heat and the humidity. Mm-hmm. There's one trick fuchsia called Angel Earrings. It's actually a whole series. If you ever see those Angel Earrings, Dainty Angel Earrings Cascading. Mm-hmm. And the thing with those fuchsias is they were bred by Suntory, the Japanese whiskey company. Mm-hmm. And you might ask what a whiskey company is doing breeding fuchsias. They have a diverse portfolio, and they do plants as well. And the Angel Earrings fuchsias were bred specifically for the Japanese market, and the Japanese islands are just as hot and humid in the summertime as DC, as maybe even more. Fuchsias were very popular with the Japanese, so they bred these heat and humidity resistant fuchsias that for the Japanese market, and you'll see them occasionally angel earrings cascading, which makes a great hardy bush. So you might, if you can get your hands on it, it's worth trying in your garden.
Yeah. What about the perennial one? I understand there's a perennial one that Monrovia puts out called Aurea. It's a fuchsia genia.
Fuchsia Aurea. It's Fuchsia Modulanica Aurea. It has golden leaves.
Yeah.
The thing with the Modulanicas is they're resistant to cold, but many of them aren't tolerant of the summer heat. They come from the southern part tip of South America, Argentina, into Chile up the coast, probably as far north as Santiago. They tend to many of them tend to choke when it's warmer. There is actually the your listeners won't be able to see it, but the fuchsia behind me is actually a fuchsia modulanica that I collected seeds when I was in Argentina, and I purposely went to San Carlos de Bariloche, which is in the northern Patagonian Lake District of Argentina, and it's the northernest where Fuchsia modulanica, this particular one, occurs, and it has much more hot, dry summers, which is why I went down there to collect it. I unfortunately lost mine in New York to squirrels who dug out my little plants and left them desiccated by the time I came home from work. But there's a Lake Wilderness Arboretum happened to have a plant, and I managed to get cuttings back. So I am now establishing it again in the garden here, the Fuchsiatum.
Mm-hmm. Now, how'd you come up with that name, Fuchsiatum?
It's what I describe as Neo-Latin. It's a fuchsia. The E-T-U-M means a grove of, you can pineatum, an arboretum, for example. It's that etum ending. And I took fuchsia and etum and invented fuchsiatum.
That's so cool. So are you trying to develop more cultivars that are hardy where you are now? What are you doing with all this knowledge? Because, and let me tell my listeners, the fuchsia in the picture behind them is absolutely beautiful. What are you doing with all of this? Because we need to know.
Well, I'm basically growing them. I've been giving talks on growing hardy fuchsias in your garden. There's one I think that will be up on YouTube eventually. You're welcome at some, I don't have a URL for it, but it will be there. I'm now a member of, on the board of directors of the Oregon Fuchsia Society. So you'll notice, you'll probably notice the cap, Oregon Fuchsia Society. So our just getting the word out for people to grow them, especially in this region where many, many, many will overwinter in the ground. I started to say the Fuchsia boliviana, the one that from Peru, the mountains of Peru, it's often quite hardy here. It'll die back to the ground, but then it sprouts again. Something that when I was growing fuchsias in New York was just impossible for me because of the colder winters there. So I had one in a pot that I would attempt to overwinter in the living room, what I called my winter greenhouse, which was basically a shelf with some lights.
What zone are you now?
This is, there seems to be a little debate. This is either 8B or 9.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's the Portland, many people associate Portland with rain because of Seattle. Our two climates are very different. Portland is hotter and drier. We'll get into the Inferno 2021 a little later. But Portland has summer dry Mediterranean climate, which a lot of people don't realize. Ordinarily, what I call the winter monsoon season, 95% of the rain comes after October to maybe April. And then there's 3 months when there's practically no rain.
Do your fishes require a lot of water?
They will need a little bit of water. They like, fishes prefer well-drained, evenly moist soil, but you don't have to go overboard. They don't like it wet. So I will give them some subsidiary water. Depends on, you know, what location they are. If they're in the full sun, obviously they'd like a little bit more. Mulching helps keep the evaporation down. Mm-hmm. The climate is also, the nights are usually very very cool. Mm-hmm. It'll ordinarily fall down to 60 degrees, and even if it almost hits 100, which is not uncommon once or twice in the summer. Mm-hmm. But the nights are relatively cool. The evaporation, because it's not very humid here, mm-hmm. Evaporation is a little more intense. So they do need to be a little water. But once they're established, they'll be perfectly fine without much additional water. And they're not xeriscaping plants, obviously.
Right.
But
no need to coddle them.
No, not at all.
So how are they loving that heat you have right now?
It's none of us are loving it. Yeah. There's even full sun loving plants the have gotten blasted. I should perhaps go back and say last weekend we had historic I guess some people call it a heat dome that developed with no relief. It happens. It happens sometimes over the eastern, on the other side of the Cascades, where it's more semi-arid climate. It happens over there sometimes, but ordinarily when it happens, it pulls in cooling air off the Pacific Ocean. Mm-hmm. And the Willamette Valley, where Portland is at the top of that on the Columbia River, would benefit from that. So the previous high, I think, happened 1981, mm-hmm. where the temperature hit 107 degrees here, which is high, yeah. But you know, it's happened historically once or maybe even twice. Last week on Saturday, because of this what they were describing as once in a thousand year event, the temperature on Saturday set a new record, which was 109 degrees. Mm. On Sunday, we set a new record on top of that with 113 degrees as heat was building. And then on Monday, we beat that record with 116 degrees. I think the official recording at the airport was 115, but my garden thermometer hit for 2 minutes. It hit 116 and then came down in dry heat and the sun. And the sun singed a number of plants. I was out there 3 times a day in that heat watering. Mm-hmm. Surprisingly, the fuchsias, it blasted the buds on some of them, but surprisingly, many of them, even the ones that were sitting in full sun, just coughed it off, that's what I said. I did throw I was misting all the time. My fuchsia modulanica aurea, the one that you'd mentioned, mm-hmm. that you'd seen at Monrovia, mm-hmm. That tends to require a little shading from the sun, so mm-hmm. I did throw some shade cloth over that just to prevent the leaves from burning. But other ones, other ones, just as long as the ground stayed moist, they made it through there.
The ones in the shade did well.
They did well too. Where what I did have to do is move some of the small starts that I was rooting into the cool cellar, where it stayed 70 degrees, because those are a little more vulnerable. But the established plants in the ground I put my hanging baskets in the garage because they would have dried out too fast. And the garage stayed at, it was hot in there, but it stayed at 100 degrees, which is, it was probably, that's why I described it as Inferno 2021. It was, it was awful. I really never want to do that again. And I think people in the region are still in shock that this heat event happened.
Is this the peak of the summer for you or just the beginning?
It is, it's more or less end of June. In the olden times before global warming hit, June here would be called January because it tended to be sort of drab. There's a maritime layer of, it's not rain, but a maritime cloudy layer that comes in off the ocean and just sort of cools things off. So it's really the end of the very tail end of spring. Okay. The last couple of years have been very hot. The July, August, September was probably the height of the summer, and then usually the rains return in October. Mm-hmm. October, November are the two rainiest months here, where it can go days on end. And it's it recharges the ground. And,
Keeps things calm too.
Keeps things calm, recharges the ground. Unfortunately, the past April we had the driest April on record as well. So we're a little bit on top of the heat wave. We're in a little bit of a drought. Actually, a lot of drought. Southern Oregon is kind of suffering.
Yeah. So are the plants kind of like training themselves to hang in there in spite of the heat, or
once they're in the ground and growing, they can be acclimated. You have to keep an eye on the potted fuchsias or hanging baskets, because since the climate is much drier here, we have very low humidity and dew points, so they dry out faster. As I develop the garden, I've got way too many plants that I'm brooding and that are waiting to go into the ground. It's all part of my what I call my evil master plan and garden makeover.
Fuchsias everywhere, huh?
Yeah, fuchsias everywhere. I'm not restricted to fuchsias, but it's developing a showcase for them. I've been in this house now officially since December 1st, 2019, and I have a landscaper that is coming in to help to jumpstart some of the raised beds and things, because I could do the work myself, but I think I want to get it a little faster. I was in the garden in New York for 25 years, and I want to jumpstart this one a little faster. So the fuchsiatum is coming, and also the Oregon. I have a higher authority to answer to. The Oregon, the Hardy Plant Society of Oregon, has open gardens. Ordinarily, COVID threw everything for a loop, but there's a whole. There's a whole open garden program that I was told by my friend Anne. You probably remember Anne Amato from DC.
Yes.
She says, you will be ready for an open garden. It's like,
This year?
Not this year, no.
Oh.
Yeah, if it were this year, I'd have a heart attack because the landscape and the contractors for what I intend, everything is so backlogged. I finally settled on help in the beginning of February, and Rebecca is only showing up Wednesday with pencil and tape measure in hand to get the process going. That's how backed up things are here. Everyone has been redoing whatever the garden needed. So,
do you think that's because of our unintentional period of pausing last year, or is gardening just a hot and happening thing up there?
I think both. I mean, here gardening is a lifestyle. It's amazing how large the garden community is in the Pacific Northwest, especially in Portland, mm-hmm. where Portland has, it was Saturday last year, it was canceled, and it would have been my first Portlandia, which is a big flower fair that's put on by the Hardy Plant Society of Oregon. And it ordinarily has 200 vendors from all of the nurseries in the region. There are literally hundreds of them, many of them specialty nurseries. Mm. The Seabright Garden, Secret Garden Growers, mm. that Fuchsias and More. Miller's Manor. Dancing Oaks.
Wow.
The number, Monrovia is actually headquartered here as well. Hmm. So Portlandia didn't happen last year. This year there was a briefer version of it, mm-hmm. which was really exciting. Because I
was
came home
in
with
person?
A new fuchsia. Hmm? Yes,
it
was, oh. Yes. We managed to stay a little more isolated from COVID. It didn't hit quite as hard here, even though I don't have to tell anyone how incredibly scary everything was at the beginning.
Yeah. But so are things happening in person now on the regular?
Yes.
That's good.
Yes.
That's good.
We did socially distance the Oregon Fuchsia Society. We had socially distanced meetings last summer, masked. We usually meet in one of the halls at Western Seminary. Mm-hmm. I'll make a plug for them. They're wonderful people, and we usually meet and rented one of their halls there. We have I'll go back into later. Anyway, since we couldn't do it inside during mm-hmm. the summer season, we held a drive-in style outside in the parking lot. So everyone brought their lawn chairs. We were all more than 6 feet apart and spread out all through this parking lot with demonstrations and things. It went on. During the winter, Zoom has been a godsend for plant societies for meetings.
Yeah. But now I think we're all ready to see each other.
Yeah,
even if it's still distance, just to see each other makes a difference, you know?
Yeah, I think we'll be fully open here soon.
Yeah. So what's next for, I'm going to mess up the name, the Fuchsiatum.
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 Fuchsiatum. That's what I've been saying, just sort of glided out. What's next? Well, developing the garden. I've been redeveloping the beds. The house had been previously landscaped. To be honest, the plant choices were so uninspired that the things you might expect in suburbia anywhere. There's plants that are near and dear to a lot of people, but don't necessarily, you know, shine in this climate. There were too many hydrangeas and azaleas for my taste. I don't really mind them, but there's so many more interesting plants. We can grow a lot of camellias outside that they do beautifully, like they do in the South. We can grow a lot of wonderful South African plants. We can grow wonderful plants from New Zealand and Australia. Bottle brush trees do really well here. So, I mean, the range of plants is great. I intend to add a lot of friends to the fuchsias as I continue to develop the garden. I removed when I first got here. I just was spent the year, which I think COVID helped, but I spent the year studying the way the way the garden passed through the seasons. Mm-hmm. I had to remove a gigantic dying Norway maple from the street for fear of it falling on the house and the neighbors. Oh, wow. So it opened up a lot of sun. Norway maples aren't really suited to this climate, but they were widely planted in this area. I just described them as a groundwater suction device. If you have a summer dry Mediterranean climate, the last thing you need is a gigantic Norway maple just literally sucking the fluid from the landscape.
Right.
So I'm sad for the shade that it provided to the front of the garden. So I'm redeveloping that. I am really happy to see it gone. I've replaced it with a wonderful crepe myrtle called Muskogee, which gets about 30 to 40 feet tall. And this particular cultivar has sort of lavender pink flowers. And it is supposedly blooming for 3 to 4 months in the summer. Then it turns gold and red in the fall as the leaves drop. And also it has exfoliating cinnamon colored bark that when it drops off. So anyway, I'm really excited. I have 9 flower heads on the new tree that was planted on the street.
Oh, wow.
I wasn't expecting any this year, but I have, I went out there and counted each one. There's 9 of them.
Wow. So you've had it in the ground now, what, just since 2019?
Actually it went in it went in the spring. So in March I put it in, but it's gotten a second flush of growth, and I splurged and got one a little larger from the nursery because it's in a prominent position, and I liked it so much I went out and bought a shorter one, and I'm going to actually repeat it in the garden itself. It's on the street.
Nice.
One of my ultimate goals is I was left with way too much lawn in the front of the garden. Lawn requires, again, because the summers are so dry, lawn requires a lot of water to keep it green and going. And I don't have a herd of sheep to keep it under control. And it takes away from the flower beds, the fuchsias that I crave, and other friends as well. So there'll be a lot more diversity in there when the lawn goes on a severe diet. I may or may not keep a small segment of it in the middle. So I imagine perhaps an oval because it's just so unusual.
Right. Well, let me tell you, when I bought my house, there was some green stuff in the front. I can't even really call it lawn. It's not there. I have a meadow, and it just, I mean, it's like a symphony going on out there right now. I have the East Coast generics, daylilies and hydrangeas, but my camellias, you know, a dogwood seedling that I got from Biltmore 17 years ago. This year it was like, you know, it's not going to bloom. I'm going to take it out. And I went out the front door and there's 2 blooms. I'm like, okay, I guess you're staying, but there's no lawn. So when I hear lawnmowers, it's like, they just need to add more gardens. That's all.
I was really clued into during my sabbatical year, the pandemic year, when I was just not doing much. Nurseries were sort of hesitant. They hadn't quite opened yet outside. So they eventually opened social distance. But I have the great luck of having a house with a porch on the front, so you can, the garden is all in the front and on the western side. So sitting out on the porch, watching the neighbors go by, studying the lawn, and one of the things that I noticed right away is the birds were only in the beds ringing the lawn. They were never on the grass. And there was a flock of robins that had come back last spring, not this spring, but the last spring before. And one of the bushes had berries on it, and they just totally ate the whole thing. I think they were robins anyway. Usually they go for worms, but they just came through, migrated back and just ate all the berries. But almost none of the birds, the crows will do some patrols on the on the lawn, but the birds are all in the flower beds. They're in the bushes. They're in the bird baths, which I have three or four of them because it's so hot and dry here, and it's just a joy to watch all of this, all of these birds enjoy the flower beds. So more flower beds, one of the joys here are the hummingbirds. Anna's hummingbird, which just love the fuchsias, and they come around. They tend to overwinter here because of the generally mild climates. I was a little worried with that freakish ice storm that we had last February, but the Anna's hummingbirds are just all over the fuchsias. Wow. And it's so much fun to watch them. They're more territorial than the ruby-throated hummingbirds that are in the east. Uh-huh. So they stake out a territory, and if I get too close, they'll come right up to your face and start chiding you with that sort of like ticking noise that they make.
Oh wow, that is so cool! But you know, it's funny when you said about the birds, because a lot of my neighbors do not have flowers, and they have lawn, mm-hmm. and they have odd shaped shrubs.
I've seen those. You're being kind.
I'm being kind. But what's funny is I can sit here in my office. I can go out front. There's birds everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I have one bird feeder. I'm putting more throughout the garden, but right now I have one. There isn't even any food in it now. And the birds just kind of hang out on it and swing. And, you know, they're in and out of my daylily bloom. They're everywhere. And it's like, I've got a symphony in my garden that other people don't. And I've got color and texture and, you know, sequential bloom. I can only imagine what a fuchsia would do in my garden if I could keep it alive.
Yeah, you could. You know, I'm going to have to take cuttings of my angel earrings and mail you one. I've mailed them off to several people, and there's one growing in Georgia. North of Atlanta, there's one in Vermont.
Oh my. The one in Vermont is doing just fine.
Uh-huh. Well, it gets taken in over their Arctic winters, but I'm always very happy to proselytize fuchsias and share what I think would help survive in your climate. So
the Fuchsia Society, is it only in Oregon? Is it across the nation?
There are mostly on the West Coast. There's the American Fuchsia Society, which is the world's first fuchsia society. It was I'm also a longtime member of that, which is another story. It was actually the first one I joined. The American Fuchsia Society was founded in 1929, and it's centered in the Hall of Flowers in San Francisco. And it one of the largest fuchsia societies in the United States. In 1942, I'm drawing a blank, was the Oregon Fuchsia Society that was founded here, and then in 1983, the Northwest Fuchsia Society, which is centered in the Seattle area. So, I mean, we all know each other, but the climatic conditions in the three places are a little different. So it's nice. I always tell people, you know, join up. Even for years, I was a member of all three in New York. I think I was a branch of one, the New York, the Manhattan branch of the American Fuchsia Society, for example. My old friend Sally Dahl, both Sally and I grew a lot of fuchsia species. She unfortunately passed away a few years ago, but she was my major fuchsia pen pal for years.
Oh.
And she wrote a book called Wildly Seeking Fuchsias, which is really special. She was a high school teacher before she retired. So Yeah, I always tell people join a fuchsia society. I also belong to the British Fuchsia Society, which is a lot of fun. We have several groups that that are on Zoom, the Fuchsia Friends gossip group we've been meeting on Zoom Friday mornings for the last year and a half. As some of my British friends say, it's the silver lining of the pandemic. Zoom bringing people together. Last Friday's meeting was intercontinental. We had people from members at that meeting from Australia. We were joined by obviously the British contingent is heavy there. There's continental Europe. Lovely lady was her first meeting from the South African Fuchsia Society.
Wow.
That had joined us. So it's a whole nether world of fuchsia lovers out there meeting on Zoom, belonging to the to societies.
Oh, so what is your favorite fuchsia?
Oh God! What am I looking at the moment? I can't really say. that is such a hard question to ask. I think I love them all. I have a particularly intense interest in fuchsia species, all 108 of them that went into many of them never used for hybridizing. Mari de Koker in the Netherlands is actually working on hybridizing, using as a lot of the Dutch breeders are using some of the more unusual fuchsia species to give new shapes and forms to some of the flowers. He's working on it. Probably doesn't mean much, but he's working on a hardy triphylla fuchsia that's a purplish color. So triphyllas being the ones that with long blossoms that resemble honeysuckle blossoms. The Gartenmeister Bonstedt that got me off as started on this track as a teenager is called the triphylla. The original species is from the mountains of Hispaniola in Haiti and the Dominican Republic. And it was actually the first fuchsia that was scientifically described.
Wow. Is there going to be a Teo fuchsia?
People ask, are you into breeding fuchsias? And honestly, it is, it's a labor of love. You've got to go through hundreds, if not thousands, of seedlings to get anything that's of interest. By some estimates, since fuchsias have been around in the garden, there's probably 12 to 15,000 different cultivars. Not all of them are grown anymore, or many of them are lost. But to get really new, distinct fuchsias is a labor of love. Mm-hmm. Ron Monnier, used to run Monnier's Country Gardens here in Woodburn, bred. I think he had 24 releases at one time. His fuchsias start with Debron. So you have Debron's Smoking Blues, Debron's Black Cherry. So they're Monrovia. Actually, if you go to Monrovia website, you'll see some of the Debrons. I think they sell some of his. He moved to Milton Freewater, which is in eastern Oregon. The first winter he was there, the winds blew. It's a little colder out that way, and the winds blew, came off the out of the east, out of the mountains, and ripped the cover off of his hoop house. So he lost his entire stock. A little depressing. He's now working on getting that up. His wife, Debron. Uh-huh. Told him since he had everything inside the house, told him at one point, get those fuchsias out of my living room. So he's got a new greenhouse, and he'll be breeding them. It is really a labor of love, and I'll leave developing new hybrids to people like Ron, who's got such a great eye.
Uh-huh. Oh, I bet it's amazing to go into his greenhouse, though, and see all the work that's being done to increase the fuchsias.
I will absolutely say that he also it was when he had his nursery in Woodburn. The first time I was there, I saw he hadn't released it yet, but I saw his black cherry, Debron's black cherry, which has buds that literally look like little black cherries before they open up to a dark purple corolla. And I saw it in the bed, and it's just like, I want that.
Oh, wow. And where does he
So
sell them now, or does he sell them now?
they're sold in nurseries all over, actually. In this region, some of them. The big problem with getting your hands on fuchsias from the East Coast is a mail order. There's Miller's Manor, for example, has they must have a couple hundred hardy fuchsias, but they don't do mail order. So this is it's a sad problem for a lot of people in other parts of the country that want to that see pictures that I post maybe on social media, and then like, where can I get that? Where can I get that? Well, you can fly out to Portland.
I was gonna say, well, air travels back up.
PDX, that's
Oh
our airport.
wow. Well, can people follow you to find out all the beautiful pictures that you're sharing?
I'm on Twitter. I'm on Instagram. There my handle is here's another name that's Neo-Latin, Fuchsiarius. And if you can spell that, I'll give you a gold medal. But it's Fuchsiarius. And it means it's another word I invented from Latin. It means somebody that grows fuchsias, basically, or that deals with fuchsias. So that's my handle on Twitter and Instagram. The Facebook page is a little different. It is the Fuchsiatum.
Okay.
So there again.
Fuchsiatum. I like the way that sounds of the Fuchsiatum, like a sacred place for fuchsias.
That's exactly what I was thinking. it's a feisty place with hummingbirds chasing you off if you get too close.
Yep.
That's
Thank you so much for spending time with me today.
Oh, Terry, it's been fun.
I love the pictures that you post, and it's going to be different when we all gather again at the Garden Bloggers Fling.
I'm so looking forward to seeing you there and seeing all of our old friends.
It's just like, can we breathe now? It's just going to be so much fun. So that's going to be next year, and we're looking forward to it. But more importantly, I'm looking forward to staying connected with you on Instagram and on Twitter. And I'm going to look for a fuchsia that I can't kill.
I know a few that you probably, it's growing in Georgia, north of Atlanta.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm gonna try. I'm gonna try.
You're gonna try in Virginia, DC. I convinced Tracy to we were at that I'm trying to think of the name of that wonderful greenhouse that complex that we were at, and they had one of the angel earrings, red white, I think it
Merrifield.
was. Mary,
Merrifield.
yes. And Tracy went home with it. She managed to keep it alive. I haven't asked her this year if it's still there,
I
but
was going to say, I'll call Tracy.
call Tracy.
Well, thank you so much for your time. And we'll be staying in touch, okay?
To take care.
Okay, bye-bye. Well, I guess I'm going to have to wait for my cutting of the fuchsia that Teo will send me. Teo, thank you for spending time with me and giving me a little more knowledge that I definitely needed about fuchsias, no matter where you live. I meet so many people along my life's journey that leave a footprint on the path to my heart. Teo is one of those people, always happy, always willing to chat, and just such a lively personality. But it reminded me of a wonderful poem by Alice Walker. And the name of this poem is called This Human Journey. Don't waste one moment trying to be someone different or someplace other than where you are. This human journey is like finding yourself in Brussels rather than in broccoli. Find out what's good about the place in Brussels as in broccoli. There must be something. No matter how rough your garden might be at this point in the season, no matter how much you don't understand about gardening, delve deep into it. Find understanding. Find a way to enjoy connecting with this earth of ours. Get outside. Let's go play in the garden. It's there for us. It's been there for us, and we need to embrace her. I'd like to thank each and every one of you for continuing to follow me on this journey, this life journey. It's oh so wonderful. My Facebook page, Cottage in the Court, Instagram and Twitter, Cottage in Court, and of course my website, cottageinthecourt.com. I recently reviewed a book all about flowers, about the life of James Vick. I know, I didn't know who he was either, but let me tell you, James Vick is someone that we all need to know. If you're interested in finding out who he is, pop on over to the blog. It's just a great book, easy read, and helps you appreciate flowers, Victorian flowers, even more. Have a great evening.